Welcome in to the Wednesday edition. Robbie Rexroad here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Joe Rexroad here with Junie Riddle in for Robbie Stanley. Michelle Knezovic. Junie, how are you?
I'm doing really good outside of my 7-Eleven fiasco this morning, trying to pull over and get some caffeine. And 7-Eleven was closed. I thought they were always open.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was a great start to the morning. I feel refreshed.
Yeah, that's weird. I thought so, too. Also, you don't have any caffeine. We have caffeine here.
Yeah, no, I know that. I know that. But, you know, it's always better to go to an establishment to go get your caffeine than, you know, the community coffee. I guess I just have.
Do you think our coffee's crap? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm not saying that. Maybe I am.
Well, I mean, your actions will speak. You know, like, I always bring a coffee. I've got a double here. But, I mean, I dip into that well.
See, new house, still trying to kind of get the coffee situation at the house together. So I'm still relying on the 7-Eleven, and 7-Eleven failed me because, unlike you all every day that get up and do this show at 6 a.m., you're accustomed to knowing what places are open. Apparently, I am not, and 7-Eleven needs to let everybody know that, you know, their location is not open 24/7 so that we don't pull off to the side and waste our time trying to go into a closed place.
Yeah, that is disappointing. Michelle, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well this morning, guys. Thank you for asking. A little tired this morning, but, you know. I did bring my caffeine, so
yeah.
It'll kick in soon.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you don't miss on that.
I don't miss.
Only no. When she spills it is when she misses.
Oh, that's
Joe know. Wasn't here that day.
I heard though. I heard it was a doozy.
Tears were.
Well, last night, folks, Preds Golden Knights, Preds with a big win to keep things alive, 3-2. It's 2-0. Actually, it looked like it was 3-0. You know, goal taken off the board. Then the Knights tied up. You know, for a lot of that game, I think you saw, Junie, what the Preds, you know, struggle to manufacture offense with this young lineup. But Tommy Novak gets two early, and he continues. And that's right. That's a win. That's a win for you,
finally,
Michelle.
Finally.
That is
pick
a win.
To click.
So in pick to click, because he had two goals, does that mean Michelle gets 2 points? Is
nah,
that how that works?
No, nah, you just get the one. Mm. But that's still, it's been a while, so you'll still take that. Now, here's actually a question I have, because Cody Glass, I always forget this. Cody Glass gets the game winner for the Preds in overtime, so they get the 2 points. So they keep it alive. They're still alive. But actually, Michelle, does that one count? Someone picked Cody Glass, didn't they?
No.
That does not, even though it's not like a shootout, but that doesn't count if it's an overtime goal.
Oh.
It's a 3-on-3 goal. I think it, right? Does it count?
Sure. We'll let it count.
I don't know. Robbie knows the rules. We'll ask him, I guess. I don't even remember who picked him. But anyway, it's 3-2. It's a big win for the Preds, and you're talking you know, you're talking about, I thought they had to get 2 points out of the three games this weekend, you know, to be in there when they go to Winnipeg, go to Calgary, and, you know, have a chance to do something. But also, Chicago last night helps out big time. Those tanking Blackhawks beat the Flames on the road 4-3. So what you have here is you've got a really interesting situation. I mean, the Preds are going to have road games that matter against the two teams ahead of them. Right now, the Preds sitting there with 86 points, Winnipeg with 89. They both have played 77 games. They both have 5 games left. Calgary has played one more game, and they have one more point than the Preds. 78 games played, so the Preds have a game in hand on them, and they're only a point back. So it's interesting. Yeah, they've made it interesting to the end here, Junie.
They're definitely in striking distance. And, you know, I was talking to, you know, David James before we went on the air about this, about last night. I find this young core more entertaining to watch than the group that they had before the trade deadline. I mean, the way they move the puck, I feel like it has a lot more fluidity in the offense. The power play is definitely different. They scored 2 goals last night on the power play, even the one in overtime that was the game winner. So it just really seems like these young guys are, you know, taking the opportunity to seize this chance. And I think that adds a lot of confidence, especially for the front office, for the fans that are looking at, you know, what is this team's future? Are they going to be competitive in years to come? And when you have guys like a Tommy Novak, like a Tomasino, like a Luke Evangelista that are constantly making plays against, you know, first and second line opponents, it gives you a lot of confidence knowing that these guys are kind of going to be probably on your second and third line next year. And then when, you know, Matt Duchene and Forsberg and Yossi and all of them come back, that these guys can be those added contributors that could, you know, maybe make this rebuild a little, you know, not as long.
Yeah, possibly. I think the entertainment value of watching them is also, to me, probably tied to expectations, right? Because obviously this team going into the year was supposed to be something that it wasn't. So they were underwhelming. They were disappointing. We know what happened at the trading deadline. I mean, this is – it's kind of playing with house money now, right? I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, I think they're still going to look back at this and say, hey, good run, way to fight for it. And also, like you said, there are some young guys here that we're seeing who I think are going to be a big part of this team's future. I still don't know who exactly or how big. I mean, Tommy Novak, though, he's got a special kind of skill that, you know, I mean, David Poile was on with us yesterday, and I mean, actually kind of like, yeah, a little bit of like mea culpa, like they didn't know he was this good. I mean, he's sometimes guys get on heaters, but I feel like we're seeing maybe a little bit more than that with him. And certainly I think Luke Evangelista is going to be a big part. And Tomasino too. I mean, Tomasino last night was really important on the ice for this team.
I feel like Luke Evangelista is going to be kind of the big boy forward that they're looking for. I mean, when you watch him play, the amount of chances he takes, I feel like the way he tries to sift through the defense in the middle with his puck skills and his ability to create shows that he has a lot of talent and potential. But you talk about a guy like Tommy Novak. I actually worked the Smashville Live that he did with Juuso Parsonen. Juuso Parsonen is a big guy. Like, he's a big, tall, you know, beefy dude. Tommy Novak looks like he could work at your local Barnes & Noble. Yeah, right. You know what I'm saying? I think with him, it's more of less him putting himself in a good situation. His second goal last night was all about where he was on the ice. He was right there to get that rebound, and as soon as it went off the goalie's pads, he was right there and hit it in, on the top shelf. I feel like one of those, he's mentally there. And he's mentally going to do and make the right plays. And his talent level and his size and his presence isn't going to overwhelm you. But to have a guy that's going to go out there and do the right thing, I feel like that's something that the Preds can rely on in the future.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And look, I mean, I think Cody Glass, of course, game winner last night. I think that's 15 goals this year for him now, you know, after kind of a slow start. And I really think somewhere in there he's going to be important in the lineup. And then, you know, like – I mean, when a team is in the situation the Preds are, like you mentioned, those guys are hurt. I think Yossi's coming back. I mean, again, Poile again said yesterday, I don't think Poile is going to keep talking about, like, how close he is if their plan is actually just to shut him down. So I think we will see Yossi, which obviously that could be a boost here. You know, if you get Yossi back for, you know, there's a huge game Thursday at home against Carolina, then you go to Winnipeg, then you go to Calgary. I think Yossi will probably be back in there, but – in the meantime, even like last night I was at Bridgestone and it was like, wait, what's that number? Who's that number again? Okay. Oh, yeah. Like, you got to totally relearn this roster. Like, a guy like Kevin Gravel, guys just throwing his body all over the place, blocking shots. And, you know, for some of these guys, they aren't going to be a key. You know, like, some of these guys are getting opportunity right now that it's there for them because of circumstance. And, you know, they may not be full-time NHL players long-term in their career. But I think that's kind of a cool part of this team, too, is some of those guys who are getting a chance and playing against really good teams and still managing to hang in there and get wins.
And I think that also contributes to this whole, you know, John Hines conversation. You know, early in the year, I would say most Preds fans and, you know, people covering the team would have seen him kind of on the outs. I know you've been more of a proponent of him, but I think with what he's done with these young players, especially for the reasoning why he was brought in to develop these young guys to come in here and kind of, you know, get more production from the forwards. I see him as, you know, a better coaching job of what he's done as of late that really could secure him into coming back next season. And I think it's been quite impressive. And it leads me to see, like, what are the lines and what are these what is it going to look like next year when, you know, you have four forwards that are playing the center position that could genuinely compete for the top two lines. I mean, you mentioned Cody Glass and Tommy Novak. Yusuf Parson was playing really well before he went. And then, obviously, Johansson went down as well. So it's where are these guys going to get, you know, thrown into the mix next year? And I think that that's a good problem to have.
Yeah. Now, I still wonder how good ultimately is that team, you know, if it's – and again, this has been impressive, good for them, and I do like some of these guys, but I also – you know, like, it's a big question this offseason. Like, are they going to try to, you know, also bring in some big-time help? Because they could. And they got a lot of – they got space and they've got draft capital. Or is it next year going to be kind of a find out what they have with some of these guys, you know? I hear you on Hines. And you know, I've just never been a believer in, you know, that he should is absolutely, like, the problem or should be fired. I mean, there, you know, there's fair criticisms and ultimately it's about your – bottom line. I also, though, like, and I'm with you, I think he's done a good job here. I still think it just comes down to, like, Barry Trotz and whether Barry Trotz actually has someone else in mind or not. I mean, if not, then, yeah, I mean, I think John Hines has done well here down the stretch to kind of show that, like you said, there's some young guys getting better, and also they're finding ways to win when they shouldn't on paper. But, like, to me, it really just comes down to Trotz and how he views it, right? I mean, when new GM comes in, usually the new GM also picks his coach.
Well, I mean, but you got to think of, you know, Barry Trotz. He is also a former coach, mm-hmm. and I think when you look at the best organizations, you know, across professional sports, not having a lot of turnover is a good thing. And I think when you look at the positives of what Hines did this season, and you look at Barry Trotz, who's kind of, you know, been outed maybe a little bit early in some of his stops, you know, with the Capitals and the Islanders. I thought especially with the Islanders, they let him go maybe a year or two too soon. I felt like they had an opportunity to hang on to him, especially when he had just taken them to the conference finals. Like, I think it was the year before he got fired.
Yep.
You know, he's done a really good job, and I think he knows, you know, how being a coach year to year can be. And so I just see, you know, with the way that, you know, this team has played throughout the circumstances. I mean, they were talking about it on the ESPN broadcast last night, and getting it from the national perspective, I think, kind of shines some light as to, you know, how everybody else sees it. And they see it as, you know, this team is really outperforming and they really have to do their homework because, like you mentioned, they don't know a lot of these guys. And the fact that they're going out and performing like this, I feel like has to be a testament to John Hines.
Yeah, no, look, he's helped. And if Barry Trotz is coming in here and saying, you know what, open mind, let's just see how he does, then I don't see how he hasn't helped himself. All right, when we come back, we're going to get into the Titans because, you know, I know Junie has a lot of quarterback takes, lots of quarterback takes. So we're going to get into those. I'm going to flip the conversation around that we've been having this week on Titans fans on not getting a quarterback. Coming up next, Robbie and Rexo, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game in the game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, hit us up on the phone or text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Thank you. June Riddle in for Robbie Stanley, and let's just get into the quarterbacks. I mean, it's been quarterback week. You know, look, it's. I feel totally fine now talking about any mock draft, any draft iteration, implication, whatever. I mean, I hate doing this before April, Junie, but we're in April now, so I say it's fine. And I know you probably love talking about the draft all year long. I think you do talk about the draft all year long. And or the Steelers.
I probably talk about the draft midway through the season.
Through the season, yeah.
The draft outside of football season is the best day of the year for me. I think the parity, all that goes on, the chaos, the unknown. You know,
so the best day is the first round? Which day? The first round day?
I actually like the second day, okay, with the second and third round. I think the most valuable picks are there because there are guys that fly under the radar. And I think that that's more intriguing than what goes in the first. I mean, the first round is flashy. That's like your pop music. But your second and third round is the foundation. And really, when you talk about teams that have good drafts, it's always day two that you find those under-the-radar key guys that probably should have been first-round picks in that mix. So I really like watching that the second day.
Kind of like A.J. Brown in 2019.
Yeah.
He's a pretty good player. Yeah, I like the draft too. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like the actual draft. The actual draft is great, and they've done a heck of it. I mean, it was not that long ago that it was like basically all one day, and I mean, you still had Mel Kiper, you know, on your cable, you know, non HD, talking about all the picks, but it was still, you know, it was good, and they've managed to make it a huge deal, break it up, make it as valuable a TV commodity as you can have. I like it a lot too. It's just a little bit exhausting. The conversation all year. I mean, just the NFL. Look, kudos to the NFL for what they've done to dominate the news cycle. But in this market, we've been talking a lot about quarterbacks, Juni. First of all, let me just get your thoughts on what we've talked about this week, which is the idea that the Titans might be interested in moving up to 3 and mortgaging a lot to get up there to get a quarterback.
See, I am of the proponent that I wouldn't mind them taking a quarterback in this year's draft, but I don't think any quarterback outside of C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young are worth trading up for. This team has so many holes, and I feel like you ruin the ability to rebuild this roster, kind of like I mentioned, you know, the second round. You're going to have to give up second and third round picks along with your future first, which are going to be super valuable in rebuilding this team. And with the moves that they've made in free agency, I mean, I feel like they're good moves, they're safe moves, but they're not solidified players that have proven themselves. A lot of these deals are like, hey, we've seen your potential. We're not going to give you a lot of guaranteed money. We're not going to give you a lot of years. You're going to come in here this season, and you're going to basically show us what you got. And so when I look at that and the amount of, you know, if you don't count the players that they've brought in as your core future, I feel like they have to hold on to those future picks just in case that, you know, an Azeez Al-Shaair doesn't work out or an Andre Diller doesn't work out or an Arden Key doesn't work out. Those are key positions that this team is going to really need in the future. And if those free agents don't pan out, those draft picks are going to be invaluable in the future in order to really build this team back up if they want to turn it around and be a contender again.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I'm going to continue to say, though, if you believe that you have your quarterback, whoever it is, maybe one of those two guys, I would agree. Like, I mean, Bryce Young is my clear best QB in this class. I think Stroud is 2. I think Hooker for me is 3. But look, some people do believe in Anthony Richardson. Some people do believe in Will Levis. I mean, it's whatever the Titans' evaluation is. If your evaluation leads you to, yep, he's available, you're right. You're sacrificing a lot. And, I mean, these guys are probably basically getting an opportunity to show what they have for a not very good team. But how do you pass up? Let me flip it around. Okay, so let's say they don't, you know, and they do what I think they'll do, which is draft at 11. They'll draft a tackle, or they'll, you know, maybe a receiver. I think it's a stretch to think about Jackson Smith and Jigba at that spot, but whatever. Maybe they're able to trade down. Someone wants in, and they can get more picks. So how good is this team going to be in 2023?
I don't think they're going to be that good. I really don't think they're going to be that good. You look at their, you know, because Vegas released the projected win totals, and I think the Titans were at 7.5 on that. The only teams that they were better than, according to Vegas, were the Raiders, the Colts, Texans, and I believe maybe the Patriots. Maybe even not the Patriots. I think the Patriots might have been ahead of them. So, again, yeah, 2 of those teams are in your division. But when you talk about the AFC as a whole, I just feel like the Titans are a bottom 5 roster. And necessarily, I don't think that they're going to be an awful team. But if they hang on to Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, they're going to still be in that happy middle. They're going to win between 7 and 9 games this year, in my opinion, unless they go out and make a big splash move.
Okay, so that you said happy middle. See, to me, that's where you don't want to be.
Well, no, I said that kind of facetiously, but no, I just don't think that this team is going to be good. I think it's a lot of patchwork. I think the defense is still going to be elite, but you know, without an offensive line and Derrick Henry getting up in age, I still think he's going to still have productive years ahead of him. But you know, with a kind of patchy offensive line, Tannehill gets a year older. You know, there's still a lot of question marks at receiver, and in nowadays NFL, I think, you know, you could have gotten away with not having a true number one receiver 5 years ago, but the way that the league has turned around, you have to have that number one receiver. And I think that we've seen that ever since A.J. Brown has left, gone to Philadelphia, and him alone had more stats and yards than the entire wide receiving core of the Tennessee Titans this past year.
So if they're that, and again, this is my case for – this is my case for really seriously considering it. And look, it could all be misinformation. I mean, it certainly is possible. But I think the Titans' level of homework, and by the way, I think today Hendon Hooker has a top 30 visit to the Titans. So, I mean, it's like, you know, the work they're putting in, where they're going, who they're having in, tells you that they are doing what they should be doing, which is seriously evaluating the quarterbacks. I think it would be malpractice not to. Doesn't mean they're going to do anything, but like you have to think that way, right? But if they don't, and they're what you say they are, and I basically agree. I think they're a middling team. So, who and how and when your quarterback? Because you have to figure that out, and you do not want to be the Colts and go find the next, you know, bargain bin veteran who you hope has another good year or two every year.
Yeah, no, you definitely don't want to be the Colts, but in my opinion, I have been on record as to saying that I don't think that they should have Ryan Tannehill on the roster this upcoming season. Like, I really don't. I think, yeah, when you look at how quarterbacks are being paid in today's NFL, you know, Ryan Tannehill is kind of a bargain, but like we had mentioned, if Tannehill and Henry are on this team this year, they're going to be good enough to be just average. And I think unless you address the quarterback position in this draft, which I don't think that they will do, then you need to start looking at next year's draft. And next year's draft has a lot of high-end guys. And you're not going to be able to go get one of those guys if you're in that happy medium. So for me, I've been the proponent of moving off Tannehill, getting a bridge quarterback, which I think at this point is a little late to do in that plan. So I think it's already a bit too late to do that. But you just have to look at these options. Like you said, they're doing their homework on these quarterbacks in this year's draft. If Will Levis is there at 11, I think you take him. I truly, truly believe that. I am on the Will Levis train. I'm not a fan of Will Levis whatsoever and Kentucky, but I look at his traits and I look at what this guy's able to do. You know, quarterbacks in this league typically don't come from the big powerhouse schools. They come from a place where they had to come over and get over adversity. And I think when you look at a Will Levis being at Kentucky, not having the same talent as a Tennessee or an Alabama, you know, not having an elite offensive line, not having an NFL caliber receiver, losing your offensive coordinator this past year after you had a career year at Kentucky, I see him as a guy that if he's there at 11, that could be something that could solve your issue going into this season.
That's a take. Okay, and so you're a Fank fan too. So you're a Fank proponent. All right, we'll get more into Junie's Fank plan coming up next. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106 through the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Junie Riddle in for Robbie, and we'd like to invite you to join 102.5 The Game for the second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament, benefiting Souls for Souls, June 7th, Hermitage Golf Course. Put your team together. Come play with athletes, musicians, other local celebs, celebs such as Junie Riddle and Michelle Knezovic, I expect, to support a great cause and have loads of fun. And you'll have a chance to win awesome prizes. Sign up to play, sponsor, or donate at thegamenashville.com/golf. Welcome back in. We're talking, we're talking the draft. We're talking quarterbacks, and Junie has a lot of takes. All right, first of all, okay. Yeah, it's okay. So you got Bryce Young third. So Bryce Young is your third quarterback. So your top two are?
CJ Stroud is number one. I think that he is the most ready to play.
Okay.
I like his accuracy. I like his size. I think he can be mobile when he wants to, and I think he proved that in the Georgia game. It was, you know, that performance was what I had been waiting to see all year long from him.
He was great in that game.
I have Will Levis at two.
Good God.
I do.
Oh, my God. And let's end the show. End the show. Stop it, Junie.
But why?
Stop it. Oh,
I just want to know. I genuinely want to know, like, why.
I don't
he
hate
has
Will
the arm.
Levis.
He has the athleticism. He is a playmaker. He's a leader. He has the confidence that you want in a starting quarterback. I think if he falls to the right place, he can be dangerous.
Okay. I mean, what's
his floor? What's his floor, Rex Rhodes?
What's his floor? Oh, well, his floor is absolutely lower than Bryce Young's floor. I think his floor is absolutely lower than Hendon Hooker's floor.
Okay. I would question the Hendon Hooker stuff.
I mean, look, Will Levis. Look, I don't condemn Will Levis to busthood. You know, he could. I agree. He has good athleticism. He has a big arm. He's done good things. I've also, yeah. I mean, you are biased by what you see in person. He was so bad in the game I watched in person last year. And by the way, Anthony Richardson was so good in the same stadium, but, you know, against the same team. I understand they had offensive line issues and all that. I don't think all this interview stuff that you're hearing is just total puffery. I mean, I think you have to take that somewhat seriously. There are teams that just don't like the dude.
Well, if you were a team that really liked a quarterback that's getting hype around being a top three pick, would you go around singing his praises to everybody else? No. I mean, that could be smoke and mirror saying, hey, you know, this guy has a bad attitude and try to, like, lower his stock to where he would fall to you.
Yeah.
I just don't buy a lot of narratives around this time.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. Okay. And here and there, when you have this report here, that, like with the Titans going up three, I mean, that one is kind of a spare thing, right? So it's like, interesting. If you have a unison of voices starting to say the same thing, it's like with Jalen Carter momentum. I don't think that's a team here or there randomly just trying to, oh, let's get Will Levis down the draft. I mean, look, there's misinformation and there's real information, too, that comes out on this time.
Well, Jalen Carter was also.
That's a little bit troubling.
Jalen Carter was also involved in a really serious incident that we saw, you know, people lost their lives in. And I think that within itself is a bit more serious than, you know, Will Levis being a little bit arrogant in his pre-draft interviews.
That's fine. I mean, I'm not even really talking with Jalen Carter about stuff like, you know, apparently he's not going to do interviews with teams out of the top 10, not being in shape at pro day. I mean, frankly, the incident was awful. It's a tragedy. It's terrible. I've never believed that incident, based on what we know of it, was ever going to cost him one spot in this draft. I mean, it's a mistake by young people collectively, and he got lucky and didn't lose his life. I mean, it's not, you know what I mean? I mean, but regardless, I put a little stock in that. And look, his inconsistency as a player, I mean, it's kind of the same thing with, I look at Levis and Richardson as very similar. I just think the ceiling is higher for Richardson. So Levis would be my fifth quarterback, for the record, of all these guys. But hey, you know, I appreciate that someone out here is trying to fight for Will Levis other than Michelle, because it does feel like it's getting a little lonely out here on the Will Levis bandwagon.
Well, I hate that it is Michelle that's on the same train with me, because I like it when Michelle and I disagree for our show on Saturdays, because, you know, when we go back and forth, I think that makes for a better product. But unfortunately, in this instance, we do. And I think when you look at this guy and you look at his intangibles, his floor to me is Carson Wentz. I think that's the worst that he's possibly going to be.
Carson Wentz was almost an MVP in this league.
Well, and again, he had a stacked.
So are you saying Carson Wentz, like, very recent version?
Yes, the recent version, okay. The turnover prone. Because I think the one downside to Levis's game is his turnovers and his decision-making. And I think it's, you know, I don't care what quarterback it is, Joe. The quarterback position relies on where you fall in the draft. Patrick Mahomes might not be Patrick Mahomes if he got drafted to the Chicago Bears. And I know Bears fans hate to hear that, but the fact that he landed with Andy Reid, the fact that he got to sit behind Alex Smith for a year, who played like an MVP candidate in 2017, those are big – things when it comes to the development of a quarterback. If Will Levis goes to the right situation, which he played in the same type of scheme back in 2021 with Kentucky that he would be playing if he were the Titans quarterback, a run-heavy type of offense to where, you know, the quarterback uses their athleticism and kind of, you know, schematically throws receivers open. I like that for him. If he were to fall to the Titans, I feel like that the system that is ran here in Tennessee with Derrick Henry in the run game, having a good defense, is going to set him up well for the future. Obviously, the offensive line is a concern, and that's something that they're going to address, receiver position as well. But I just look at Will Levis and what he can bring to the table, and I think that if you try and develop him right, which they are excited about their new quarterbacks coach, London, that came from the Falcons. If you truly believe in this guy and his ability to develop and nurture a quarterback, I think the traits that Levis has would be a perfect fit for this offense in Tennessee.
If you're going to do that, I'd rather have Richardson. But, you know, we've got takes on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com. Chase says the floor equals Jake Locker. Now, that's a floor. Chip from Mount Juliet, Levis has a higher ceiling at this time and greater body of work than Richardson. We'll see how he gets developed. But then on the other side, you've got Cam saying, Levis threw for 98 yards against one of the worst pass defenses in the country. Bryce threw for 455. Anthony Richardson threw for 300-plus against that defense. And that's true.
This
and,
I is mean, just some, Tennessee bias.
Well, I mean, but look, I mean, it like I said, okay, I watched all three of those quarterbacks this year in Neyland Stadium in the press box. And I came away saying, Bryce Young's the best player, period. I mean – His sense for the game is, to me, astounding. I think he's going to be great. We'll see. And I also, that day with Anthony Richardson, that day, it's one day, but I was like, okay, that's like number one overall pick talent right there.
And he
made throw after throw, read after read. He was outstanding. One day, and he wasn't always. But Levis was also terrible, terrible against him. Now, again, this is – and, yes, it's all – I mean, there's like the control here, of course, is that it's all the same defense. It's still also one game. So I'm like I don't dismiss what you're saying about Levis. If you tell me right now, 10 years from now, Will Levis is going to be a good player, good quarterback in the NFL, I could see it. But I do – I also feel like there's a lot of a lot of inconsistency with him as well, which is what people – knock Richardson for. Zach says, why do people keep saying Levis has athleticism? Is it because he's tall and muscular? He has the fourth least amount of rushing yards among top five. I wouldn't go by rushing yards, Zach, as a athleticism. He's very athletic.
He's very athletic. Zach just told me, plain and simple, that he has never watched Will Levis play in an actual game. And to your point here, I get it. Levis had his worst game against Tennessee. Richardson had his best game in Tennessee. And naturally, Titans fans who live in this state who are more than likely Vols fans are going to take that and run with that. But I'll point to you this game, the Florida-Kentucky game where Richardson and Levis went head-to-head. Levis had an outstanding game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was better than Richardson.
And Richardson looked god-awful. I mean, god-awful.
Well, he made a couple really bad mistakes.
And I will say this. I just think that Will Levis is a better passer. I think he is a more accurate quarterback than Richardson. I think, for me personally, I wouldn't even touch Anthony Richardson in the first round. I think it's absolutely insane the amount of hype that he's getting purely off of his athletic ability.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong. That is not what this is. And we'll be back and we'll continue to argue this point. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Especially if people are talking about Richardson in that spot. And I'm getting annoyed with that, Jared. I'm getting kind of annoyed. I've always tried to be kind of diplomatic because different people see things a different way, and I get it. But everybody talks about the amazing upside potential of Anthony Richardson. I'm thinking, what, as a quarterback? He hasn't shown you anything in college that he has an upside potential as a quarterback. None. He's a great athlete. He's got a massive upside as an athlete. But as a quarterback, it is pure speculation, you know? And so, and people always point to the Utah game, how amazing Richardson was when Florida beat Utah in the opener last year. Wow, was he fantastic. Look at these plays. And I'm getting tired of that too, because I look at the defense of Utah and how they opened the gate over and over again. And again, Richardson took advantage when Utah opened the gate on defense. You can give him credit for that. But Kentucky, the next opponent for Florida, watch that film. They put everybody in the right gaps. They didn't put two or three guys in one gap and leave something wide open for Richardson to run through unopposed. And with Richardson having to deal with defenders doing the right thing in the right way every time, he was terrible against Kentucky. To move up to number three to get Richardson is an absolute leap of faith that I just don't see value in. So if one of the other two quarterbacks ends up there because somebody else grabs Richardson, I can see that point. But, man, just to get up there to get the third quarterback that happens to might be available, I just wouldn't understand the Titans doing that.
That was Trevor Maddich, ESPN's Trevor Maddich, yesterday on Stillman and Company, which, you know, I got to say, after that, Jared had a pretty impassioned defense. I actually, this is a situation where I actually wouldn't mind hearing Jared's response. Normally I would say don't play. I'm not saying to play it, but I'm just saying. Like, he had a pretty good response, which is, well, first of all, the Utah game, that's fine. But, the Vanderbilt game, he threw for 400 yards. They had a couple big mistakes. Vanderbilt won. Someone on the text line, DrewMobileSunday.com, by the way, said Levis and Richardson both lost to Vandy, so they both should go in the seventh round. So that's an interesting thought. I just like Trevor Maddich. I like Trevor Maddich a lot. I respect Trevor Maddich. Look, in stuff like this, I do not go through snap by snap. I don't know if Trevor does or not, but I know people who do, who I respect, and like they're going to be wrong every year on certain people. Some people who do this for a living, who go through every snap, who've gone through every snap, absolutely believe Anthony Richardson can be a great quarterback. Your point, Junie, about it just being athleticism, I don't think that's true at all. Yes, he's an incredible athlete in that, and the size and the speed and everything, the arm. I mean, it's very appealing to people, but it's not like the guy hasn't done good quarterback things. You said he's the next Terrell Pryor?
Dude, I do.
He's not the next freaking Terrell Pryor.
I think
no
he
one
is.
Ever thought Terrell Pryor, people. Terrell Pryor went to Ohio State, and that offense at that time, he was very good. They used him well. Terrell Pryor needing to be an NFL receiver was a pretty that was pretty obvious before he got done in college. Anthony Richardson, people are talking about him to be the number one overall pick as a quarterback. There's no comparison between the upside of quarterback between those two guys.
I disagree. When you only complete 53% of your passes in college, and the first three games of the year, you don't even throw a touchdown pass. It took him a while to get out of the gate. Like Trevor had mentioned.
See, now you're picking and choosing stats. But, I mean, the completion percentage is fine. I mean, that's worth talking about.
But I just think the most important thing for an NFL quarterback is your accuracy, not how deep you can throw the ball.
I don't disagree with that.
I just think personally when we
– But you have Lil Levis, number two, right? I mean, his accuracy is not consistent.
It's not consistent, but I feel like it's definitely – significantly better than Anthony Richardson. I just look at Will Levis as a more refined product. He's been, started 2 years at Kentucky. Anthony Richardson has only started one. I like quarterbacks that have actually gotten some experience under their belt. I feel like if Anthony Richardson were to come out next year in next year's draft and make that one of the better quarterback classes, you know, of all time that we talk about for, you know, years to come, that would have been better for him. Now, if you're talking about this realistically, would you if you were Anthony Richardson's, you know, advisor, you know, like somebody in his life, would you tell him to come out in this year's draft or to go back to Florida to, you know, get some more reps and some more experience? Like, realistically, what would you think he needs? Do you think like now is the proper time, or for him to, you know, get another year under his belt, get some more experience playing in the SEC, you know, show scouts and show people who are going to be, you know, looking to draft this guy that, hey, you know, he can develop, he can get better, you know, he needed another year. And I think that the fact that people just want him to come to the NFL and sit for 2 years on the bench rather than actually getting playing experience in the SEC, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, look, based on the information I have now, I'd tell him to come out because this is a violent game, and you're one helmet to the side of your leg from having a totally different draft situation. But I mean, I'm not disagreeing that he could have absolutely benefited from the year of college, but next year's draft is ridiculous. So he's not gonna. He probably doesn't project any higher, even if he does make those gains, right? Like, I don't think he's passing either of those two guys at the top, and you know, there's some other guys who are interesting too. So. Look, it's just like Levis, like you said with Levis. Does he go to a good situation? I mean, Anthony Richardson needs the same thing, you know? And they both do. I mean, you're right. Levis, I would agree, more refined, and that offense is a little bit more translatable to a lot of NFL offenses. You talk about completion percentage, by the way. That offense is a part of that completion percentage for Anthony Richardson, too. There's no question about it. That is not a quick access, RPO-heavy, get a bunch of quick little short completions to inflate your completion percentage offense. So, now, it still needs to be better than it was. But both of these guys, in my opinion, are not ready next year to be NFL starting quarterbacks anyway, right? Like, they both need to develop and to sit, right? I mean, I think so. And if that's the case, I'd take the guy who I think can be better. Don't know if Anthony Richardson is going to get there or not. And, look, this is why – They're 4 or 5 for me, okay? They are 4 and 5. Richardson 4, Levis 5. You know, that's why I like Hendon Hooker. I would draft Hendon Hooker before both of them because I absolutely believe the floor is quite a bit higher with him. The ceiling isn't as high, but Hendon Hooker is going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. I can't say that about those two guys.
I mean, I think Hendon Hooker will be a solid quarterback in this league. I just don't see a lot of the upside. I look at Josh Heupel in this offense. I look at the receivers that he had. I look at the offensive line. You know, Darnell Wright's easily going to go into the first round. He had a lot around him. And I get, you know, any person that comes from, you know, a good offensive system is always going to have that bias towards them. But I just feel like, you know, like you had said, the inflated factor of this, the RPO, the dumping it off to the side. I mean, how many times did we see Tennessee put two wide receivers out wide and simply, you know, Hooker just throws it out, dumps it off, and lets the wide receiver make a play? That was a key play
offense. How many vertical shots did they also throw where he threw it perfectly? I mean, when you have
three really talented borderline NFL receivers, I'd say, you know, Brew McCoy is, you know, his NFL levelness of where he is, that we'll see what he does, you know, this next year with Joe Milton. But I mean, when you're talking about having a Cedric Tillman and you're talking about having a Jalen Hyatt and Josh Heupel is this new young up and coming offensive coach putting his guys in really good situations, I just feel like the quarterback that has to go through the most adversity is going to be better off being able to adapt into the NFL. You know, Hooker's age. That's also something that we have to take into account, that he's a little bit older. You know, why did it take him so long to kind of to get into this situation? I think some of that has to hold some merit against him as well.
Well, I mean, I heard people say that about Joe Burrow, too. God, look at all those receivers. You sure this guy? Really? Is he that good? I mean, there's other quarterbacks in this league who have – I mean, I got Tua and Jalen Hurts playing with ridiculous lineups, right? They're doing okay. Well, as long as Tua can stay healthy. I mean – there's some examples to your point about quarterbacks who, when you say adversity, who comes to mind? Who are you talking about?
I don't know. I look at, you know, I know the last couple of years some of the Bama guys and some of the Ohio State guys have played a little bit better, and kind of changing that narrative a bit. But I look at a guy like a Josh Allen. You know, nobody thought that he was going to be anything big. You know, for me personally, I know that
he was bad early in his career.
He was really bad. And I was one of those that I was like, I can't believe they drafted him. Like, what were they thinking? And now in hindsight, looking at what he is now, that's something that brings to mind. Lamar Jackson. You know, Lamar Jackson comes from, you know, Louisville, a perennial basketball school. A lot of people had questions about whether or not his game would translate, and it did. And I think that, you know, When you go to a school that is not a primary football school and you don't get all the talent, you don't have the best receivers, you don't have the best offensive line, I think that, you know, carries some merit saying like, hey, he didn't have everything, but yet we're still drafting this guy because, one, he has a lot of talent, he has a lot of upside, and he didn't have all the best players in college to where he could just simply go out there and dominate knowing that the rest of his team is better than the guys that they're going up against.
I love how a knock on a Tennessee quarterback now is that he was so loaded with talent around him. That's
I mean, it's good for it's good for Vols fans, but I just think
they had some good players. You know, they had some good players. Darnell Wright's very good, but no, I mean, it's not that the Alabama Ohio State thing, right?
What about the Alabama Ohio State thing?
Well, Alabama and Ohio State, these quarterbacks, and by the way, I still do think Justin Fields has a chance to be good. I don't want Bears, the new school Bears fan over here to get too excited, but that the level of being loaded at those places is still doesn't compare to Tennessee, right? I mean, Tennessee had a heck of a year last year.
100%. Tennessee didn't nearly have the defense, but I'm just looking at the offensive perspective. Tennessee had one of the best offensive lines, best receiving corps. I mean, they were the number one offense in the entire year, and I just think that the way the college game differs in between the NFL – I just look at it and I think that Hooker was put in a better situation that made him look a bit better. You put a guy like Will Levis or an Anthony Richardson in that offense, and I would personally put Hooker over Richardson in this year's draft, but you give Will Levis what Hooker had, and I think that you look at Will Levis completely different.
All right, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Video streaming brought to you by Superbook. And when we come back on Robbie and Rex Show, we're going to actually talk a little Vols, various sports with Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24/7. Coming up next, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.